If you want to know what is really happening in the world today, you need to read the Parsha HaShavua, the weekly Torah reading. Join Rabbi Mendel Lipska for the next hour as he delves and enumerates the themes running through the weekly Torah Parsha, only on 101.9 High FM.
And a wonderful Erev Shabbos to all of you. Good to be with you, to share some ideas, to explore the Parsha, to see within the Parsha some lessons in life, relevant lessons in life, things that we need to know, things that guide, things that clarify. This is what the Parsha, this is what Torah is all about. It brings God's wisdom into the world, and through Torah enables us to share in that wisdom, to understand the world a bit better and to understand ourselves a bit better as well. And this is why the weekly Parsha is so important. It's a custom among many that every single day you study one part of the Parsha. As you know, the Parsha is divided into seven, and to learn one portion with a commentary, preferably the commentary of Rashi, who is the classical commentary on Torah, this is something which will enhance your life. It'll bring joy. It'll bring clarity. It'll bring purpose. The weekly Parsha is so much part of ourselves. And this week's Parsha, of course, is Baha'alotcha, which translated simply means when you will raise, elevate. But what are we talking about? We're talking about kindling the menorah, the candelabrum, in the tabernacle, and ultimately in the Beit HaMikdash as well. Now, the tabernacle was a place of absolute divine godliness, where it says the Shekhinah, God's presence, actually dwelt within the confines of the holy area. And part of the daily service in the Mishkan was the kindling of the menorah, the candelabrum. Now, the candelabrum was not only a magnificent, beautiful piece, but also represents, as our sages tell us, particularly our Kabbalistic teachers, that it represents all the Jewish people and every part of the Jew and the Jewess themselves. The six branches talk about the six characteristics that each and every one of us possesses, all facing the center of our soul, rising up to godliness. The menorah is something which brings light, not to illuminate the interior of the Mishkan, but actually to illuminate the entire world, a world that is helim, a world that is, well, dark, disguised, confused. This brings light to the world. And the kindling of the menorah was something that was done by Aaron, the Kohanim, on a daily basis in order to bring about, first of all, the unity within oneself, the unity within the people, and ultimately to bring light to the world. And this is why when we open up the Parsha and we take a look at what Rashi says, it's somewhat confusing. It says that Aaron was despairing because he and his tribe were not included in the inauguration of the Holy Temple, as were the tribes and heads of tribes of each one of the Shvatim, each one of the tribes. Each one brought a gift, as we read last week in great detail. Those gifts were part and parcel of the installation, the inauguration of the Mishkan, the Holy Temple, the Tabernacle. And Aaron said, I was not part of that. I too am the head of a tribe of Kohanim and Leviim. And this is why Chol Shedato, he was a little bit despaired. And the commentaries ask the question, why would he be despaired? After all, he was the high priest. He would serve in the temple. And we see Rashi quoting the sages, telling us that God said to him, have no worries. What you will do is greater than what the others have done. And it will be on a daily basis. What is that all about? Why did Aaron despair? Was he jealous of the other tribes? No. But he felt that to participate in the inauguration of the temple is something which is vital, vital to the holiness of the temple and also vital to the holiness of each and every single tribe. He wasn't jealous. He knew that he had a great privilege and duty ahead of him. What he wanted, however, was to have participated in the inauguration. What does Rashi quote? He says, you will kindle and prepare the candelabrum on a daily basis. It should have said the other way around. You will prepare, then you kindle. And the answer is kindling the first time. But every single time you prepare the menorah for the next kindling, it's as if you have done it for the very first time. You are concerned that you weren't part of the inauguration? Of course you are. In fact, every single day that you prepare and kindle the lamp, the menorah, it's as if it was done for the very first time on the very first day, as did the other leaders of tribes bring a gift for the inauguration. Your inauguration will be an ongoing thing on a daily basis. And there's an important lesson to be learned from this. You know, we often do things, but after a while it becomes monotonous, the same thing every day. You lose the sparkle. You lose the excitement. It no longer uplifts you as it did when you did it the very first time. The very first time, the excitement. Can you imagine Aaron coming into the Holy Temple with the instruction of God to illuminate the menorah for the very first time? What an exciting moment. What a holy moment. What a moment of tremendous divine energy. Now, can you imagine every single time that Aaron did that, he had the exact same experience as if it was for the very first time? And this is something we have to know. Somehow we have to bring out from within ourselves this deeper appreciation of the important things that we do in life, particularly mitzvot, God's commandments, that every single time we do it, it's as if you do it for the very first time. A woman or a girl lighting candles Erev Shabbat. Of course, the first time they did it was exciting, bringing light, the moment. But can you imagine if you're able to create within yourself a feeling that this is the very first time that you're doing it every single Friday, every single Erev Yom Tov? What a great feeling of purpose and clarity that would be. Putting on film, a young bar mitzvah boy puts on film for the very first time. An exciting moment. He becomes a man. He is now fulfilling one of the great mitzvahs that a male is obligated to do. The very first time. It's exciting. It's new. It's different. Can you imagine if we spend a moment every single day before we put on film and somehow create within ourselves the feeling that this is the very first time? And this is the lesson that we learn from Aaron. This is the lesson that we learn from the opening parsha. It's possible, perhaps not every single time, but it's possible to create and recreate that excitement of doing a mitzvah for the very first time, which brings about a tremendous sense of joy and purpose. Joy, because there is a natural joy that comes with doing something important for the very first time. But also it brings about a state of purpose. Not that I did it yesterday or the day before or a year ago or 10 years ago or 50 years ago and I keep on doing it now. There is a purpose in every single time that I fulfill a mitzvah because it's as if it's been done for the very first time. Nothing is redundant. Nothing is extra. Yes, I did it yesterday. Well, I'll do it again today and tomorrow. No. When I do it, it's as if it was never done before by anyone in the world. Imagine again, a woman, a young girl, lighting candles on an Arab Shabbos. And it's as if this is the very first time that the candles have been lit on Arab Shabbos. Ever. No one else did it. This is the ultimate recognition of the deeper purpose of a mitzvah. Aaron wanted to participate in the inauguration. God said, you will, every single day. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
As mentioned, the Parsha is Behalotcha. And Behalotcha is a Parsha that contains a great many different subjects. Behalotcha. To elevate. referring, of course, to the flame that rises when the Kohen kindled the menorah. But Behalotcha is a general concept of elevating a great many different situations. In fact, perhaps to elevate each and every single aspect of life. Elevation means moving things upward to a higher, to a better situation. Yesterday I was at this point. Tomorrow, through effort and through attention, I will be better, and so on and so forth. The constant process of elevation. And this parsha contains, well, strange stories. Stories of failure. The story of the quail, how the Jewish people, well, vexed God, came to Moshe with all sorts of complaints about how dissatisfied they were with the service and God's feeding them. And they remember the good times they had in Mitzrayim in Egypt when they were fed all sorts of wonderful things, fish and different types of melons and cucumbers, etc., etc. And one wonders, first of all, how could they possibly say something like that? They suffered in Mitzrayim. And secondly, they had the manna coming down from heaven. And it's a very sad moment in the development of the Jewish people at the time. And we have to think to ourselves, how can this be a process of elevation? And the second thing, of course, is the story of the Pesach Sheni, the second Pesach. We know that story. Pesach Sheni, people who were ritually impure, they were tamei, came to Moses when Moses gave the Jewish people the instruction of bringing the Pesach Sheni, the Paschal sacrifice. They said, we are tamei. We unfortunately cannot bring a sacrifice. But they despaired. And they said, why should we be deprived of fulfilling this great mitzvah here in the desert, finally, as a free Jewish people? Lamani goro, why should we, in fact, be denied the opportunity? And God listened to them, because Moshe said, let me ask God what I should do about this situation and your request. And God said, tell them that a month after the first Pesach, the actual Pesach, there will be Pesach Sheni, when they will have the time to purify themselves, to leave the state of Tumah, ritual impurity, and then they will bring the Pesach Sheni, the Korban Pesach, on Pesach Sheni. Which of course tells us, and we've often discussed this, the idea that nothing is ever too late. There's always an opportunity to correct something, to elevate something. But there's a different dimension over here. And if we listen to the story carefully, it brings to mind the power of an individual, regardless of the state that he or she might be in. People were tamei. When you are ritually, well, imperfect, ritually tamei, it's not only some physical situation, it's not physical at all, it's spiritual. When you unfortunately are not sensitive as you should be to God and His commandments, it's something which affects you on a spiritual level. And yet, these people who were tamei came to Moshe and they said, why should we be deprived? Yes, we recognize our status. We are not where we should be. But can something be done? And sages tell us it's as if they added a new chapter in Torah, although Torah was given in its entirety at Sinai. This was given to them at this moment as a result of their strong overtures, desire to serve God. What does that tell us? The people who were ritually perfect, ritually enabled to bring the korban, they didn't add a new parsha to the Torah. They simply fulfilled the mitzvah of the korban Pesach. People who are tamei, people who are distant, people who are far from perfect, quite imperfect, they have the capacity and did make an overture that brought about a new dimension in Torah. What an insight. What an insight. None of us are perfect. There is a general sense of tuma as long as we are in exile, and each and every one of us has cause to consider that perhaps I am not as perfect as I should be. And a person in that state of mind can kind of lose hope. Who am I? Not only who are you? You, more than anyone else, can change, in fact, the direction of Torah, where Torah introduces a new law, a new section of Torah, to enable you to fulfill God's will. This is something that we possess because there is a part of us that never, ever becomes impure. It retains its holiness regardless of anything else that might happen on a spiritual level, on a physical level, on a mental level, on an emotional level. Regardless of the flaws that might be there, this inner dimension of our core, of our center, always remains perfect. And it's only during times that we recognize the fact that we're imperfect that we can actually reach that core and bring about tremendous divine change by introducing a new law. This is something which is so important to understand. In fact, our sages tell us that b'mokom shebalei tshuva omdim, the place where a repentant person stands, tzaddikim gemurim, the ultimate righteous people, don't have that same elevated status. And it's something for us to recognize. Recognize that because we are in a state of imperfection, it's now more than ever before that we have the capacity to do something great, not only for ourselves, but for everyone who is Tomei, and not only at this moment, but for all time. Powerful beyond words. And that forms part of Bahalotcha, the elevation. The elevation even from the lowest possible situation to the highest. Another interesting thing in this week's Parsha is the fact that Moshe was told to make two trumpets. And the trumpets were sounded when Moshe wanted to assemble the people, when they had to, God forbid, go to war. Different sounds, different trumpet sounds for different types of Moshe reaching out. What is interesting to note is that God says you have to make these trumpets from your own money. They have to be yours. It doesn't belong to the community. It doesn't belong to the nation. This is a private entity belonging to you alone. And not only that, but when Moshe left this physical world, those trumpets were hidden away. Whether they went with him, we don't know. The point is, no one else could use those trumpets. But trumpets are basically methods of communication, making announcements. Why did it have to be owned personally, a personal asset owned by Moshe? And why could nobody else ever use those trumpets, even though other prophets have taken over from Moshe? And the answer is, as we always speak about when it comes to Moshe, the most perfect of all leaders. No other leader ever reached the level and position that did Moshe. Moshe was perfect in every sense. What are these trumpets all about? These trumpets are about calling out to others, exercising leadership, bringing about assembly, giving instruction to the people, letting them know how to move, how to go, the order, the structure, a leader who is concerned with his people on every single level. And he calls out to them. And our sages, our Hasidic sages, tell us that the word chatzotzros actually means chatzi tzura, a half face. Why? Because when you call out to someone, it's not two strangers. Because that type of communication never really works. It's one half calling out to the other. Moshe is the half of leadership, perfect leadership. And he calls out to the nation and he says, you are the other half that brings about the wholeness of Am Yisrael. And because of that, the people listen. No other prophet was able to achieve that perfect level of leadership, the half face. The chatzotzros. And this is why it had to be a personal asset of Moshe, because no one else could. And no one else could use those trumpets. They were unique to Moshe. And the lesson, of course, that we learn is that when we call out to someone, if we're looking to call out, however, to say something, to give an instruction, to reach someone, whatever it is, and we don't manage to communicate in that calling out, I'm only half, you're the other half, then it's not really going to bring about a true sense of connection and communication. But when you do, when you reach out to someone else and you feel within yourself that you're only half, and the other complements the other half and brings about the whole, then you know communication that follows is profound, is real, it's authentic, and it'll be everlasting as well. Part of Baha'u'llah, to elevate in leadership, in individual relationships, the elevation of calling out. And you have to make that calling out a personal, a very real expression of yourself. That's when someone else hears. There's another thing in the parsha. And the parsha speaks about, well, how the Aron, the holy ark that contained the tablets, the Aseret HaDibrot, the Luchot, how they traveled with the Jewish people. Can you imagine moving millions of people through the wilderness? It had to be done in an orderly fashion, one tribe after another tribe. It is a massive, massive logistic operation. And God wanted it to be done in a very particular way. But then Vayehi bin Soa Aron, something that we say every single time the ark is opened, we sing it out. Because the Aron contained the holiest objects, the tablets themselves, the Luchot, the Ten Commandments. And this, in a sense, paved the way for the Jewish people, physically, spiritually. It was the center of God's presence. But something interesting is told to us about the Aron, the Ark. Not only did it contain, according to a certain point of view, not only did it contain the Luchot, the tablets of the Ten Commandments, it also contained the broken pieces of the first tablets that Moshe shattered when he came down and saw the people dancing around the golden calf. He threw them down and broke them. Very difficult and troubling moment in Jewish history. But why was it necessary, according to that opinion, why was it necessary to have the broken, shattered pieces of stone in the same ark together with the Aseret HaDibrot? And the answer, of course, is because the ark, the Luchot, they speak about the pride and nobility of the Jewish people. God's direct gift to each and every one of us, brought about at revelation at Sinai. It speaks about this incredibly infinite and intrinsic, intimate relationship that we have, which, of course, is how we continue as a people despite difficulty. But at the same time, we have to speak about not only the pride and dignity and greatness, we have to speak about the broken pieces as well, to remember that we've made mistakes. And this brings about a sense of humility. The broken pieces speak about humility. The combination of pride and dignity together, that's Vayehi bin Soa, together with the humility, that's the Vayehi bin Soa Aron. This is how the ark travels, not carried by the people, but it carries the people throughout all their journeys. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
We're talking about Baha'u'llah, to elevate everything constantly, to elevate everything, and everything can and should be elevated. Baha'u'llah, to elevate everything. And we were just talking about the Holy Ark that contained the tablets, the Luchot, the Ten Commandments. And that brought tremendous pride and dignity. How do you elevate pride and dignity? Through the shattered pieces, through humility. Humility is able to elevate pride and dignity to even a higher level. One would think I've achieved it all and forget that perhaps there are some shattered pieces that should remind one of the necessity of humility, behalotcha, to elevate. The Haftarah, Rani B'Simchi, it's a magnificent Haftarah which comes from the book of Zechariah. Zechariah was a prophet who lived at a very critical moment in Jewish history. It was when the return of the exile from Babylon took place. It was a trying time. Not everybody wanted a return. Zechariah, Nehemiah, and others encouraged the people to come back to build a temple. And the story is about how there was a high priest by the name of Joshua, and he was walking in ragged clothes, and he met an angel who told him, "What do you see in front of you?" And he describes the menorah, the candelabrum, that which we read about at the beginning of the parsha about Latcha, to kindle the candelabrum. This became a symbol of the returnees from exile. This became an awareness of how the return must take place. Are you lighting up the world? Despite the fact that you might be wearing ragged clothes, whatever that might mean metaphorically, and even you might be in a situation of despair, God forbid, a returnee from exile, sometimes broken in spirit. And Satan, we're told, stands at the side to try and confuse the issue so that Joshua the priest, doesn't see the greatness. But despite that, he does. This is how you come back from exile, lighting up yourself and lighting up the world. And this is why the angel says to Zechariah, "What do you see in front of you?" He sees, "I see an instrument, an object that brings light to the world." Not in those words, but an instrument, an object that brings light to the world. This is how you return. Exile is a place of tremendous imperfection. We don't see the greatness of God. We don't necessarily see the greatness of our people all the time. And it might cause some degree of sadness, but no. Yes, the garments might be ragged. But as I said before, there is the core, the center, that is always perfect. And therefore you can recognize the menorah wherever you are and bring light. It wasn't an easy task for Zechariah to help the Jews come back. So many of them, well, refused to come back. And it was listless. And they came back and they intermarried. And beginning the construction of the second temple was an arduous, difficult job. It was a time of tremendous challenge. But they came back home. They built a temple. And the rest is history. But it's not history because even the second temple was destroyed. And the commentary says that when Zechariah is speaking about Rani v'Simchi, be jubilant, be joyous, he refers to the time of the ultimate Beit HaMikdash with the coming of Mashiach. And this is something that we have to understand, each and every one of us. Each and every one of us can recognize the menorah in one's life, in one's presence, and bring light and change to the world. And I conclude with one more aspect of the parsha, a troubling one, where Miriam, the sister of Moshe, and Aaron, the brother of Moshe, they criticize Moshe for a particular type of behavior. And God becomes very angry with them. In fact, he punishes them. And he says, "How dare you speak about my prophet Moshe? Becho beti nemanu. He is trusted in my entire house. Ultimately trusted, like no one else." Commentaries ask the question, what kind of compliment is that for Moshe, that he's trusted? A regular person can be trusted as well. in the house of God. No one's going to take anything, God forbid. No one's going to, Moshe, do something like that. And they explain that what Naaman means, that not that he's trusted, he's trustworthy and confidential. Not everything that he saw in heaven, he communicated to the people. He saw the angels. He saw God in its purest state, not in the world of distortion. He saw great things, but he didn't share everything with all of us. Even though he was a person who was committed to the act of chesed, which means giving as much as you can, he knew the limits of what people should hear and what people shouldn't hear. We live in a world today that communication has become bizarre, a circus, every type of platform, and what people use it for. I ate this for breakfast. I had that for lunch. I'm wearing these shoes today. Whatever you think, whatever you experience, you communicate. That's not communication. That's noise. That's confusion. And yet this has become the criteria of life today. We learn from Moshe to understand what confidentiality means. It doesn't mean keeping secrets, but it also means what to say and when to say and how to say and what not to say. Also very important, sometimes more important. This tremendous opportunity of technicality, the technical advance that has brought about this ability to communicate, can be a curse instead of a blessing. From Russia we learn what God said, Bechol Beis Neamanu, he's trustworthy to know what to communicate and what not to communicate, which is also part of Bahalotcha. To elevate, sometimes you have to refrain from saying and doing something. Even if in your own mind it's important and good, it might not be. And this is where maturity, intelligence, understanding of how to say what has to be said and not to say what shouldn't be said. It's a fascinating parsha. It has so many different elements. I've just chosen a few. But it has all sorts of insights into the entire theme of Bahalotcha, of elevation, of understanding our purpose, understanding our greatness, understanding the opportunities that are given to us, and to elevate everything. And as I always say, listen to the parsha and listen to it well. Listen to the Haftarah and listen to it well. There's something there that speaks to you, and when it resonates, you will hear it. And if you hear it and apply it to your life in correct measure, you will see Bahalotcha. You will see elevation in your own life on the most wonderful level. Good Shabbos.